Today's date is August the 26th, 2010. My name is Jonathan Gerland. I'm at the History Center with Mr. Don Limberry, who I believe was the immediate past president.
No, I am the I am the president now.
Oh, you are the president now.
I'm the president now.
He is the president of the Experimental Aircraft Association, Chapter 1219.
Right.
Based
In Lufkin.
Based in Lufkin, okay. Mm-hmm. Let's what I'd like to do is talk about the chapter and your activities and the history of that, and then also, if we could, you know, and how that's connected with the airport and the relationship that y'all have. And so we may jump around a little bit back and forth between history itself, but then also your own personal experiences. So maybe if we just begin, just tell us when and how did you get involved in the EAA chapter?
In the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, actually started back in 1953, way before my interest started in aircraft. But
now that's
actually
nationwide, right?
That's nationwide. Yes, their headquarters is in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. They have a wonderful show every year that I go to up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, that has between 10,000 and 11,000 aircraft, and about 850,000 people visit there during that week's time. My interest in aviation started when I was still in college, and I was taking flying lessons back a number of years back.
What college did you go to?
I went to Tyler Junior College. Okay. Up in Tyler. My first aircraft lessons were at Pounds Field. Of course, it was totally different from what it is now. But anyway, I ran out of money, like most youngsters do, and all my money went to college and work and buying cars and girlfriends, you know. So I ran out of money and never did actually finish my flying lessons back then. But I always had an intense interest in aviation. Soon after that, I joined the Air Force, traveled all over the world working on aircraft, and here about 10 or 12 years ago, must have been back in the late 80s, early 90s, I started getting interested. I was in the Air Force Reserve and started getting interested in building an experimental aircraft. And I started with building an experimental helicopter. Finished it, got it built, was flying it, taking flying lessons, got it inspected by the FAA, and had it flying
Here in Lufkin.
I got started out where I'm living now, on the north side of town, out in the Moffett community. Anyway, so I went from there and went back to fixed wing and kept and finished all my licensing and got fully licensed. And that's what got me to the point today. I've had three different aircraft that I've been involved in either building or restoring, and have a wonderful aircraft now that is an experimental aircraft that I fly the youngsters, the Young Eagles, in. It was a program that the EAA has for introducing young people to aviation for their first flight. My aircraft is an experimental RV-9 built by Vans Aircraft Corporation and its kit. And it was built, finished, and maintained primarily here locally now.
So as a kit, it's just something. How do you find a kit?
It's there is a huge community out there that most people don't know about. Most everybody thinks that all aircraft come from Cessna or Piper and is built in a factory. But there is a tremendous community out there of people that build their own aircraft and are experimented or called experimental aircraft because they're classified in an experimental class because they're not built in a factory and inspected by the FAA. They are finally at the end stage inspected and maintained to FAA standards. But as they're being built, they're built in people's garages or barns or whatever. But that's where the experimental class comes from. My aircraft, as a tremendous number of aircraft here that operates out of Angelina County Airport, are experimental class airplanes.
You don't have to be. You don't have to have an experimental aircraft to be a member of the EAA.
Oh no, no, gosh, no. We've got about an even number of people that fly factory built airplanes as build the experimentals and ultralights. Some of the little lightweight aircraft with fabric wings that go out and fly on a Sunday afternoon that does about 35 or 40 miles an hour, and you don't want to be in a real heavy wind. Those people are more than happy, are more than welcome to be in our organization too. Anything that has to do with flight, if you want to build or just enjoy watching airplanes.
So you don't have to have an airplane.
You don't have to have an airplane to be in our organization. It's just, we're actually an organization of aircraft enthusiasts.
I think on the national website, the term they use over and over is recreational aviation.
Yes.
Would you say that's a fair assessment?
But we also have a tremendous number of people in the organization that fly 757s, you know, for the different airline companies and fly passengers every day, and then go home on weekend and get in their experimental aircraft and take their family cross country. So, you know, it's for anybody that loves to fly. They can be professional or non-professional pilots.
So you were already interested in experimental aviation before you joined the group, and in fact, that may have predated the group's formation.
It predated the group's formation. My interest in aviation has been as a young person. And I get tickled today because I'm around kids all the time, and of course I've got grandkids now, but the kids, anytime they hear that noise passing overhead, they're always going to look up. They're always going to look up. And young people, people of all ages are fascinated by flight. And I was at an early age, so I've always been interested in flying.
Now, were you one of the founding members of the local chapter?
No, or matter of fact.
And how did you come into the chapter?
I knew that the chapter existed.
It was formed actually in Nacogdoches.
That was formed over in Nacogdoches, was actually organized. I was not one of the founding members, but the chapter was organized over in Nacogdoches, I think in 89, I think.
I remember reading something
right there on the front page.
In 98.
Right there, 98.
98.
Yeah, in 98. And the chapter was doing relatively well, but it hadn't grown a lot. And I noticed, I got involved as they needed an organizer. They needed someone that was willing to take on the checking account and do all the things that nobody wants to do, keep track of the records and things like that. And that's how I got involved. I started hanging around because I was in the process of building the helicopter at that time. And so I wanted to be around other people that I could bounce ideas off of as far as that were also building aircraft and being involved in aviation. So that's really how I got started. But it was probably about 91, 92 when I actually got involved. I'd just come back from Desert Storm. I'd been in the war for a year, so I'd been in all the campaigns. Being in the Air Force Reserve, I was gone a lot. And so when I got back home, I looked up the chapter and I started getting involved with these guys then at that time.
Okay, so, I think what on this here you had written that it formed in 98.
Mm-hmm.
And if you said you were getting involved with them in 91,
about 91, 92. So it was probably about 3 years after. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just making sure we had the dates correct.
2000. Yeah, the September of 98 is correct. Desert Storm was 99?
Desert Storm was 90, 91.
91,
yes,
91.
Sir. Yeah, because I was finishing up my graduate school.
Well, that's
in college.
You know, Jonathan, I would have to look, but this this date came off of the came off of the charter.
Okay.
So I'm sure that that's correct. But I got involved with them a year or so after that. Matter of fact, they may have it may have been 99 that I got involved with them.
Okay. Okay. I just. Mm-hmm.
No, that's a good catch. But that is right. That was the charter date, 98.
September of 98, okay.
Uh-huh. And so, but I didn't get involved with them until like a year or so later.
Later, okay.
Yeah.
Now, did you get involved with them at Nacogdoches? I mean, did
At Nacogdoches.
So you would take your helicopter there or your plane? What would you do?
That I was still in the process of building it at that point. So,
okay.
Yes, I was going back and forth, but the actual construction was taking place at my home, you know, in a workshop.
If people build planes in their driveways and garages, how do you get it to the airport? And when do you take it to the airport?
Eventually, well, a helicopter is no problem. You get it to where it will fly. And luckily, I had a pasture out at the farm, so I kept it out there. And once I got it finished, I would actually fly it out at the farm and everything to do all the testing and everything.
So you had a little runway there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Now there's no regulation of that. Anybody can just build a plane and fly it, take off from their personal property, or
with safety concerns. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. My wife and I have a farm out in the river bottom, and we've got a 2,800 foot runway out there now. And I go to the airport just about every day. About half the time I drive to the airport, and half the time I fly to the airport off of my private strip. But with safety concerns, as long as you do things safely, there's no rules that prevent you from flying off of your private property.
Now, as far as landing at a public airstrip, say you took off at your private property and you wanted to land at the Angelina County Airport, and
in order
the first flight of the plane.
Okay,
in order to
land at a private airstrip, you have to have a registration number or an N number.
That's the number you see on the tail?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's the number that shows that you're in compliance, number one, with registration rules, and number two, that the aircraft should have been inspected and has been looked at and is safe to operate. And then, of course, if you have an electrical system, you're required to have radios to where you can communicate with other pilots and let them know that you're landing an experimental aircraft on such and such runway, this sort of thing.
I didn't mean to get sidetracked there.
But other than that, that's perfect.
That's
completely
that
legal. You bet.
Okay. So, who was there anybody influential in getting you involved in the local chapter, or not necessarily?
There were several people, but primarily it was just a great group of guys. You know, I enjoyed. They all had similar interest in aviation. And here's this guy come in from the Air Force that's got all of this building experience, you know. And
what did you do for the Air Force?
I've worked on everything from all kind of electronics to radar systems.
But you didn't fly.
No, I didn't fly. I was enlisted, so I've done everything that has to do with working on airplanes, KC-10s, B-52s, A-10s, you name it. I've done pretty much all of it.
Okay,
but the everything except jet engines. I never worked on jet engines. That was another career field. But great group of guys in the chapter. And we become friends, and it didn't take long that I realized that our membership was weighted. In other words, there was more members on this side of the Angelina River than there was on the Nacogdoches side. And so I'm beginning to wonder, the chapter wasn't growing a lot. There was about 20 or 25 members and probably 15 members very active, but the chapter wasn't growing a lot. And about that time, there was a young manager that was actually an interim manager at the Angelina County Airport and contacted me because I had just been elected as president. This was about a year after I joined the EAA. And almost immediately I moved into the president slot and contacted me about the possibility of having some meetings at the Angelina County Airport. And it seemed like an excellent idea because most of our members were on this side of the river.
Can you give that person's name?
Sure. Randy Carswell was the interim manager, and he was a younger guy. And it just so happened that Randy was ex-Air Force. He had spent a lot of time working the flight line around aircraft, too. And the fact that I was Air Force at the time, I was still in the Air Force Reserve, we had a lot in common to talk about. So we started talking and become friends immediately, and the Angelina County Airport had an old hangar that was in terrible repair. It was a general population hangar that they would put aircraft in there that didn't have anywhere else to go, you know, because it was in really bad shape. And ask us if we would be interested, if we would move the operation to Angelina County, would we be interested in moving if they gave us this hangar to base our operations in, and would we fix it up? Because the county had no money to work on this hangar. And so I got together with the other members, and we decided that it was an excellent idea. And except for the guys that were actually housed at Nacogdoches, everybody was behind it. But the guys at Nacogdoches weren't too wild about seeing us leave Nacogdoches. But we still maintained a lot of contact over there. But we did. We moved our base of operation to Angelina County. And today we jumped from the 20 or 25 members that we had back then up to over 70 members that we have right now. Very active chapter. We've done a tremendous number of construction projects out at the Angelina County Airport, all tax-free. It's not cost anybody anything. It's all been from donations. And we've done a lot of the work ourselves to improve the airport. But the hangar, the first hangar that we took on, completely rewired it, painted it, have sealed the roof, fixed all the damaged metal on the outside, and we've been housing our members' aircraft in there for years now. So it's worked out to a very close and good association between Angelina County Airport and the EAA Chapter 1219.
What would be of your membership, and I eventually want to get into the Fajita Fly-Ins and
sure.
the Young Eagles program, but besides that, are there any other special interests that the members might have, special aviation interests beyond maybe their own airplane
a lot of people assume incorrectly that everybody that is in the Experimental Aircraft Association, EAA, is a pilot. They're not. We've got a tremendous number of people that just have an interest. We've got young people that are going to college to become airport managers, going to college to become air traffic controllers, going to school to become aircraft mechanics. A lot of the membership in the EAA has no interest in flying. They just love aviation. And so we've got air show promoters in our organization. We've got people that are interested in announcing air shows.
Is that one of your interests?
No, that's not one of my interests.
There's
all kind of interest. Anything that has to do with aviation is welcome in the EAA. But we've got a sizable number of our membership, local membership, is pilots. But a lot of the people are builders. And it's amazed me over the years that there's builders and then there's pilot builders. There's builders that build an aircraft for themselves to fly, and like myself and a number of our members, but then there's builders in there that could care less about flying. They just love the nuts and bolts part of actually manufacturing or building something.
Now, do y'all draw lines to see who flies?
Oh, no. You can inspect. Yeah, that's a good point. You can inspect an aircraft and tell.
Somebody would build a plane.
Oh, yeah. But those of us that that have looked at a lot of aircraft and inspectors, we have them all inspected before we fly them. But the those of us that have looked, you can tell if an aircraft is going to be safe. You know,
probably more than just kicking the tires. Huh?
Oh yeah, kick the tires and light the fires. You know.
Okay. Well, good. Like I said, I know those are a couple of your big projects. Maybe let's start with the fajita fly-in and whatever background you want to give to that as well.
The fajita fly-in started with Judge Joe Berry when he was still the county judge here. And at that time, it started almost at the same time that we started our association with Angelina County Airport. They wanted to increase the business. They had a restaurant at Angelina County, but didn't have much traffic. And they came to me because I'd been in the retail business and had been in business for many years, besides being in Air Force Reserve, and wanted to know what it would take to increase the business. And I explained to them about fly-ins. And told them that the airports that have the fly-ins increase their business, and you know, not just for that one day that's fly-in, but it also brings people in during the week also, because they're used to flying in and out of a particular airport. So we put together the normal thing was either for fly-ins in Texas was either pancake breakfasts. Or hamburger lunches. People would throw hamburgers on the grill and they'd have people come in. Being in Texas and being somewhat of a little bit of a promoter that I am, I wanted something different than what everybody else had. I wanted something that Angelina County could say, this is ours. Nobody else is doing this. This is ours. And so I come up with the idea of the fajita fly-in. And Texas fajitas is something that Texas has that not other states have. So we had the fajita fly-in.
You have the alliteration, too.
Yes. And so we had the... So we decided to come up with the fajita fly-in. And from the get-go, it has been a tremendous success. We've averaged monthly. We're the only monthly fly-in that has been going on this long. We've, at by today's date, we've been doing this about 6.5 years. And we've had as many as 135 airplanes on the field at one time. There at Angelina County, and we filled up every available parking space, you know, when we do that. But the
I've been to a couple of those Saturday.
Oh, they had the big ones.
Yeah, and there's planes always coming and going.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's always
And we've never had an accident. It's just as safe as can be. Pilots, for the most part, are very safe people. You hear about crashes and things happen, but mostly flying is very safe. It's a very safe pastime. You just you've got to understand that you've got certain constraints. You just don't go past those. You don't take chances.
Kind of like you need to always be thinking about safety, or you won't be
always,
thinking at all.
That's right. That's exactly right. But the fajita flying has averaged to date about 53 aircraft. So we've had fly-ins that's had bad weather, and we might not have had but one or two aircraft there. But those are averaged right in with the 130 weekends. And so overall, over 6.5 years, we've averaged over 50 aircraft, about 53 airplanes a month. And we always have it on the second Saturday. And if the weather's good, Angelina County Airport will be busy on the second Saturday, and has been for the last 6 years.
It's the second Saturdays of the month.
Of every month. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had any, I don't know where this question's coming from, but I'm just curious, any like celebrities that fly in?
Oh yeah.
I mean, celebrity pilots or anything?
Oh yeah. Gosh, yeah. I don't know who Kid Rock is.
Okay.
But Kid Rock is a famous singer. He's been to Angelina County Airport several times. They've had...
Is he a pilot or he just...
No, he come through in his private aircraft.
Oh, okay.
And then we've had...
So he's come for the fajita fly-ins?
No, actually just come through.
Okay,
just come through and just happened to hit on the time that we were having the fajita fly-in and says, hey, what's all the activity about, you know? We've had national EAA directors coming cross-country that just happened to come in during the time that we were having the feed of flying, and we happened to be flying kids, and they were young Eagle pilots themselves come in a big jet. We've had astronauts come through.
Hmm.
We've had a lot of famous air show performers just come down because they've heard so much about our fajita flying, just come and visit us on that weekend. We've had a lot of politicians come through because that gives them an opportunity to see a lot of people on that day, you know.
We've had constituents.
Oh yeah, gosh, we've had all kind of activity during the fajita fly-ins.
Good. I'm glad I asked that.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Young Eagles. Let's go ahead and talk about
the
that.
Young Eagles program is a program that started about 15 years ago with the EAA. And we realized, or at the time, the leaders at the EAA realized that most people in aviation were getting older, and there wasn't a lot of new people coming into aviation. Part of the problem was the cost. It was expensive to take flying lessons and this sort of thing. So there wasn't as many new people coming in, and we felt like, or the leaders at that time felt like, that a lot of that reason was because young people weren't being introduced to aviation maybe the right way. They didn't have an opportunity to go fly, you know, and actually learn what it was all about. And so the Experimental Aircraft Association started the Young Eagles program. It's a totally volunteer program, and to date we've flown over 1.5 million youngsters.
Nationwide. Okay.
Our chapter is just shy of 1,500 kids that we've flown here locally. I was looking at the numbers the other day, and we had flown 1,480 some odd kids. We're just shy of 1,500 local youngsters that we've flown. Some of them have been for their very first airplane ride. Some of them have been up 7 or 8 times. After their first ride, they just can't get enough. Those are the ones that are going to be joining the Air Force and going to be joining the Navy and this sort of thing. They're the ones that just love it.
How much does it cost?
The fajita flying, the Young Eagles program, the fajita fly-in, of course, we ask for donations to come to it. But the Young Eagles program is free to the youngsters. Those of us that fly the kids, fly the youngsters, foot that bill ourselves. It cost us between $70 and $75 a flight, modestly, but we're more than happy to spend that to give that youngster the opportunity to get in the air for the first time.
Just anybody can come, and what do you get, like parental consent? And then
you have to sign parental consent. You have to sign because a lot of things, even though we've in the shy of 2 million Young Eagles that have been flown nationwide, to my knowledge, we've only lost 2. We had 2 young ladies that were flying with a man up in Washington State and had some kind of incident happen, and the plane went down and it killed the 2 youngsters and the pilot. That's the only ones that I know of that have ever had an accident with a Young Eagle flight. We're usually so very, very safe. We're overly cautious to make sure that the youngsters, we don't fly in heavy winds. We don't fly with any kind of weather conditions. And we fly only when the youngster can have the best of all experience. In other words, if it's rough, if the air is rough or turbulent, we don't fly. So we only fly when they can have the very best experience in the air. The youngsters have to be between the age of 8 and 17 years of age. And they have to have an interest in flying. And that's it. That's the only requirements.
Let's see here.
I've personally flown a little over 200 kids myself, and I've never had the first one that's gotten sick or had a bad experience. They've all hit the ground when we get out of the airplane and say, "Man, that was great. Can I go again today?"
You know, do it again.
They can't go again that day, but they can come back next month and we'll take them again.
How far away do kids come to participate in that? Do you know?
Mostly is local kids, but we've had kids from as far north as Ohio and Iowa that have been down visiting their grandparents for the summer and bring them out to the feet of flying to fly just simply because they haven't had the experience or hadn't had the opportunity at their home airport. Now, once they've experienced it with us here at Angelina County, they'll go home and they're going to look up an EAA chapter up there so they can keep flying. But we routinely have people out of Houston, Beaumont, Conroe, and all of East Texas will drive in. Boy Scout troops, Girl Scout troops will come in and contact us about, "Hey, we've got a bunch of kids that are working on their aviation badge. Do you think maybe we could come and fly them as Young Eagles?" And we do that a lot.
Regionally, where are the nearest other chapters, the other EAA chapters in Texas?
The closest EAA chapter to us right now is Longview, Gladewater. Tyler has an active, inactive chapter. Sometimes they're active, sometimes they're not.
What about Beaumont?
Beaumont has one. I'm not sure that it's active right now, but they've had one in the past. Houston has one of the oldest. Matter of fact, when the chapter program was starting back in about 1955, 56, Chapter 12 in Houston was one of the oldest chapters. Chapter 12 in Houston and Chapter 19 in Lubbock were two of the founding chapters when the chapter program first started with the Experimental Aircraft Association.
Now, did they give them sequential numbers? So chronologically,
Chapter 1 in California, at Riverside, California, and then from there it started.
So this group was the 1,219th?
And 19th. Okay. And since then, there's over 1,500 chapters worldwide, chartered. And of the 1,500 chapters worldwide, there's actually about active 1,000 chapters right now that are active. So there's roughly 500 that have been chartered and then failed or are not active anymore.
So these chapters, I think you just had your annual meeting.
Yes.
Tell a little bit about that when you go to Oshkosh.
The Oshkosh Experience Air Venture is the largest, most prolific air convention or air show in the world. We have people that come. There's people that come from Europe. People think of the Paris Air Show as being the biggest that there is. But anything that happens in aviation, any innovations, come out of Oshkosh, because they come out of the Experimental Aircraft Association, the when you think about it, that's why so many of the astronauts and so many test pilots are actually members of the EAA, because when you think about it, the most well-known experimental class of aircraft in the world is a space shuttle. It's an experimental class aircraft because it's one of a kind, you know. And anything that has to do with space, anything that has to do with aviation, whether it be balloons or helicopters or rocket ships or anything, comes out of EAA. Well, when you go to AirVenture once a year, of the 10 to 11,000 aircraft that actually land up there, and of the 750 to 850,000 people that visit Oshkosh in that week's time, anything new, electric aircraft, diesel aircraft, any type of flying wings, anything that's different in aviation, is seen at Oshkosh. It's always seen there first. Flying cars. This year there was three new innovations of flying cars, or what they call rotable aircraft or something like that. Anything that is new or experimental or new ideas come out of this organization. That's the kind of innovation they have up there.
How many members of your local chapter generally make the trip, Josh?
For a long time, there was just a couple of us. I've gone...
Is it generally like the officers that go? Or?
The officers have standing invitations there, because we go to find out more. It's a convention for us. We go and learn about how to make our chapters grow. Mm-hmm. We learn membership retention. We learn things about new programs and things that the chapters have. We've got a lot of builders here in this area that are building aircraft that go to learn new techniques, because they have all the workshops up there. And stitching fabric on fabric aircraft, the older model aircraft, or restoring aircraft. They have all kind of classes up there that just teach you how to stitch fabric, working with fiberglass, engine repair, electronics. Anything that's new that has to do with navigation is at Oshkosh. All the vendors are there. Oh, and answer your question. Yeah. To begin with, we had two or three that went regularly, but now we're up to probably between 10 and 15 members of our local chapter that are up there every year. And we have a blast. It's just, you go and look at airplanes, watch the air shows, you look at new products that are coming out, new aircraft that are coming out. It's just it's a week-long party.
I guess most everybody flies their own plane in. Huh?
A lot of us fly in. I do, and most of us that go up there will fly in, because it's a 5.5 to 6 hour trip versus 2 days of driving, because Wisconsin's a long way off. It's 1,000 miles, so it's a much faster trip when you fly up on a Sunday afternoon and come in and you camp right there by your airplane than driving 2 days and have to stop midway in St. Louis or something.
I want to ask you a little bit about your personal airplane.
Sure.
5.5, 6 hours. Are you able to do that without refueling? Just straight.
I have to refuel one time on the way up. I'll stop usually midway. Usually, once I leave East Texas, I will stop somewhere in the northern part of anywhere from the northern part or the mid part of Missouri. And right before we cross the Missouri River, that usually leaves about 3.5.
Do I need to pause this?
I'm in a meeting. Let me holler back at you.
Okay.
Air Force theme song. That's another retired Air Force guy, but he's built an RV-10 out here, so he's one of our chapter members. usually we're going to refuel in about three and a half hours, and then we got 2 hours left to go into Oshkosh, and that leaves us with plenty of fuel, because with that many airplanes landing up there, and I show films all the time to people that are just amazed, because there will be 25 aircraft in the pattern trying to land, and they're all controlled, and they all come in, and usually safely.
You might have to circle around a little.
You might have to circle a little bit to get into the pattern to land.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, but that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell us a little, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about your aircraft.
The aircraft that I have now is a all metal, two place aircraft with about 70 pounds of luggage storage capacity. It's got 4 hour maximum capability as far as flight, so I usually fly at about 3.5 hours maximum, usually around 700 miles on the first leg, and then gives some safety factor with fuel on the last part of the leg. But I'll cruise usually around 185 to 190 miles per hour across the ground. It's designed to get up real high. I have oxygen in it. If I go above the safe altitudes where I can get up real high,
and
cruise safely, above 12,000 feet. Yeah, so I routinely will fly at 12, 13,000 feet, and my aircraft is actually designed for that. So I have oxygen, and I know we were coming back from Oshkosh last year and had real good tailwinds at 14 and 15,000 feet. So we went all the way up to 14.5, and I had to be on oxygen, you know, for about 3.5 hours of that flight because of that. Yeah, but that's routinely. That's just a pilot thing. It's no big deal. But it is a great cross-country airplane. My wife and I will go we'll go for a weekend, and we're liable to go to North Arkansas. There's a trout fishing resort up there in North Arkansas called Gaston's that I love to go to up there. They have their own landing strip, and it's right there on the river, and just a great place to visit.
How long does it take you to get there?
Oh, about an hour and 40 minutes or so. You know, so instead of the all-day drive.
It takes you how long to drive to Houston?
I know. I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And how long did it take you to build it? You said it was a kit. So.
The first aircraft that I built, I worked on about 6 to 7 months. The second aircraft was a rebuild that I did. It was also an experimental, but when I built the helicopter from parts, it took quite a while. This particular aircraft that I have right now was a rebuild. The aircraft engine was in bad shape when I bought the aircraft because I wanted the airframe. So what I did is I took the aircraft and completely rebuilt it. All new instrument panel, rebuilt the engine, did the navigation equipment that I felt like was important to be able to go all the places that I go in an airplane. So it was a total rebuild. So it took us about probably 6 to 7 months to completely rebuild everything and get it like it is today.
Is it a twin-bladed prop?
Two-bladed prop. Which is standard metal prop, yes.
I'm looking at Mr. Lindbergh's business card, and he has a small picture of his plane on the card
yes.
here, and it's painted in Air Force color.
Oh, yes, yes. My wife insisted on that. I'm a retired Air Force Reserve, so it had to look like Air Force.
Now, you said it was all metal. What type of metals?
Aluminum.
All aluminum.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Aircraft are built with aluminum alloys because they're lighter and stronger.
Okay. Are there any other type of alloys that are being used besides aluminum, like some of the newer types of metals?
Well, a lot of your military aircraft are going to have everything from titanium, which is extremely expensive but extremely strong, but most everything is aluminum.
Okay.
Most everything is aluminum. Now, the newest aircraft designs are composite, which are what fiberglass has evolved into. Composite construction is super lightweight and as strong as steel. And a lot of the aircraft, even airlines right now, are being built with composite materials, which are actually fiberglass layers that are sandwiched together to make them extremely strong. And a lot of the and then again, that came out of the experimental world. We've been building composite aircraft for 15 years, and finally, it's finally proven itself to be that good. So a lot of the airline industries, a lot of the big aircraft manufacturers now are starting to build with composite techniques, but that innovation came out of the experimental world.
Where are the fuel tanks, or is it one tank or two tanks?
I've got two tanks, one in each wing.
They're in the wings, okay.
Everything on an aircraft, it's very critical that everything is balanced. So you want balancing from forward and aft, or front to the rear, and side to side. So you if you have a fuel tank in one wing, you got to have one in the other wing.
Are there any external tanks or anything?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
How many people will it seat?
Mine is two person.
Two person. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you said about 70 pounds of luggage, stuff, your fly rods and stuff like that.
Yeah, yes, and that sort of thing. Yes,
I got a tackle. I bass fish. I've got tackle boxes that weigh more.
That weigh more than that. I hear you. I hear you.
I don't know if you don't want to talk about it. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to, if we could, maybe talk a little bit more about the airport itself, the Angelina County Airport, mm-hmm. and maybe the relationship the EAA has had. You mentioned kind of the formation, or not actually the formation, but the reform, or
right.
the revigoration of the chapter, moving from Nacogdoches to the Angelina County Airport.
Has been
Talk
an
about
extremely
the,
good relationship.
Okay.
Extremely good relationship. It has been very good for the airport. It's been very good for our chapter. We have built quite a few things. We built a pavilion out there for the airport in an area that wasn't being utilized. It was built totally tax-free. Taxpayers had Angelina County citizens didn't have to put any money into it. It was done totally by donations and through the EAA. We've got cook buildings out there where people can go out and have weekend barbecues that we built for the airport, so they can stay out there, barbecue out of the direct sunlight, out of the heat, and during the winter time to get in under something where they're not getting rained on, and still watch the aircraft. So we've done that. We built a new storage shed for the airport and wired it for them. And they use that every day now. And that's something that we donated and built. Of course, we've completely rebuilt the hangar that they wanted us to take over and kept it painted and maintained properly. And we use that, our members use that for their projects to build airplanes in, which makes it a lot more convenient for them. Since then, we have had one of our largest benefactors, guy that really doesn't like to have his name mentioned all the time, but I feel terrible about not mentioning it because he's been so good to our chapter, and he's meant so much to our chapter here locally and to the airport. Mr. Joe Denman donated a hangar to us that he had bought strictly with our chapter in mind, because he knew how active we were with the young people in the community, and he's actually donated. And so now we've got a clubhouse that's built onto a hangar, and we use it to house our members' aircraft in. And so we've got a permanent location there at the Angelina County Airport. So we have two hangars now, including the one that was donated to us. Beautiful facility, incredible facility, and we use it to have our Christmas parties in and this sort of thing for our membership appreciation. The things that we have done at the airport, we have done, it's not cost Angelina County a dime. And we do that because our entire purpose of the chapter of the EAA is to sponsor or encourage aviation in our area. So we want that at no cost whatsoever. The improvements that we made out there have been improvements to the airport specifically where it wouldn't cost the taxpayers anything.
How has the chapter benefited the airport?
Well, the fajita flying.
About fuel sales and things.
The fajita flying. The airport, when I first started going to the airport, they had a restaurant, and they would have some activity around the restaurant, but it was never that busy. The airport diner or restaurant has been expanded, and at lunch you can't even get in it anymore. And it's that way every day. We encouraged them to start opening up on Saturday. They were usually open about 4 days a week. Then it was 5 days a week. Now they're open 6 days a week. They've added 3 new employees in the restaurant. And all of the restaurant is busy 6 days a week now. They're closed on Sunday. It's the only time. And that has come primarily from the fact of the fajita fly-ins. We've got people that fly in from the area, matter of fact, anywhere between Dallas and Houston and Louisiana and West Texas, people fly into this airport to eat at the restaurant. It's a great location to go to. The fajita fly-in has introduced most of these people to the restaurant. The military. Oh, gosh, we have military. We're located about midway between two huge Army posts. And so the military all come to the airport now because they've been to several of our fajita fly-ins, and they come in and during the time that we've got all these aircraft coming. So they all know Lufkin very well. They'll come and refuel here, plus the fact that the Angelina County Airport sells fuel at every one of these. They have a reduced fuel rate to encourage people to come into the fajita fly-in, but they have the standard rate that makes them a lot more profit money during the week. But these people that come to the fajita fly-in come back on Tuesdays or Thursdays or Friday to eat at the restaurant.
Is there one grade of aviation fuel that they sell, or is there multiple grades?
Well, the only two grades is jet fuel and 100 low lid.
Okay.
Those general aviation aircraft like mine that have regular gas-burning engines burn 100 low lead. All the jet aircraft
the
burn
octane, 100 octane.
Right. Will burn jet fuel.
You said so, low lead. Is that different from unleaded? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because it does have lead in it,
okay.
And that's one of the problems that that makes aviation fuel that much more expensive than car fuel, for instance. We'll spend $1.50 to $2 more per gallon for aviation fuel because lead is actually added to it. It's low lead, but it's needed for the higher compression aviation engines than car engines.
Okay. That day that you and I had lunch out at the airport,
mm-hmm.
and we had hamburgers.
You bet.
Or I did anyways.
I had a salad.
Chicken salad,
yes.
Yeah. You were telling me something. I almost forgot it. I wrote it down a while ago while you were speaking. And it was something I never really thought of. But y'all were talking that day, you and Steve Reeves, I believe.
Right.
Don't remember all the specifics, but it involved what I learned is that y'all sometimes might carry medical supplies needed supplies, like on a volunteer basis,
that we were there, there was two aircraft came in, and they had ice chests and everything with them. And actually what they were doing is there'd been an accident victim at a local hospital that had donated organs, and those organs were being transferred to the Children's Hospital in Houston and another location in the Dallas area. And that happens quite often. A lot of aviators donate their time to fly either sick patients or medical supplies into between hospitals and everything. And
so this is so something the hospitals that, know who yeah, to call?
Yeah, they have contact. But now most of the hospitals, like the big hospitals like Galveston, the Children's Hospital at Galveston, have their own aircraft.
And but like locally, if one of the hospitals here, who would they typically call? Would they call you or they call the airport?
They will usually, they never contact us because that has to be handled a certain way. Yeah. They will contact the people that do the emergency AirVac and they will transfer it usually for them. But a lot of the times you'll see a helicopter or an airplane going overhead, and it's actually an emergency medical flight.
Yeah, because how many aircraft does the local hospital have? Just one?
And they don't actually have one. These are different. These are actually AirVac companies that set up nationwide in different specific areas, and they may have 15 or 20 helicopters, and they'll put one in this area, another one in this area, another one in this area, but they're assigned to this hospital.
I know my young nephew a few years ago had a pretty bad horseback riding accident, mm-hmm. fell off a horse, and took him to the hospital, and then they were going to taking by helicopter to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they got all the paperwork and got him ready to go, I think it was a more important call, called the helicopter away to
yes.
Louisiana somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, I mean, everything worked out fine. They just took him by ambulance on to
right.
Dallas. But I got to thinking about that. That you
everything
know,
has...
If you've only got one helicopter...
That's right. Everything
there might
has
be
to
a
be
need
prioritized.
Right.
And the two... Over the weekend, I noticed last weekend the gunshot victims down at Huntington
right,
were both airlifted.
Yeah.
And that requires two different helicopters, and so they had to bring another helicopter in from another area to be with the one that we've got here locally.
Right. So has that happened often that some of your members have transferred?
Not our members.
Oh, okay.
We've got some members that do some of the medical flights, but we rarely, most of them have moved out of the area now.
Okay.
Most of them, they're still members of ours, but they're not located right here, right
they're
now.
They're not doing it on behalf of
no.
the EAA or
no.
their own?
No,
okay.
no.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that I've neglected to ask that you would like to share? Or
Jonathan, I don't know of anything.
We talked about the hangars and the fajita fly-in, the pavilion,
mm-hmm.
the Young Eagle program. I think Mr. Denman here had written something about the 2010 project. Do y'all regularly try to have an annual project? Or
The 2010 project is actually the Angelina County looking at improvements to the airport many years down the road. And there's always, that is ongoing. There's a future plan for the airport. We're not involved in that other than the fact of being aware of it, you know, and anything that we can do to make the airport better, you know, that's about it. Anybody that is involved with the airport is going to be involved with the airport's improvement. You know, you can't get around it.
I would assume they may have some type of plan in connection with that Angelina 20 Vision 2020.
Same thing.
That program, mm-hmm. yeah. That I know it was a countywide, not
mm-hmm.
not the county as the government, but countywide.
Right.
Everybody. I mean, even you know, I remember going to a lot of those meetings. You know,
mm-hmm.
On behalf of like the cultural institutions, you know, libraries, archives, museums.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've tried to involve everybody to make
mm-hmm.
the whole county a better place.
You bet.
I bet they have something along those lines. Well, like I said, I guess that's about all I had. I'm sure after we turn the tape off, we'll think of a few things. But
always happens.
We can maybe come back to that. And so, anyways, let me just run through this list one more time, just make sure I didn't neglect anything.
We're hoping that we're going through some changes right now with our fajita fly-in, and we're hoping that we've been doing this for 6.5 years, and we're hoping that we'll be able to continue doing this for many years in the future. But we're going to be we're going through some changes where we're doing our own cooking and doing all of our own work now. So I've got to rely more on the membership now, where we've had support from the county before. We're doing a lot more of the work. We park all the airplanes, this sort of thing, and so I've got to rely more on our membership.
How many people do you need to park 130 airplanes?
Believe it or not, about 5 or 6.
Really?
Because you don't park them all at one time, but you've got to have one real good controller that's going to say, you go here, you go here, you go here.
I guess once you get on the ground and kind of get to the regular big parking lot, the air traffic controller is out of the picture. Then it's the ground.
Ground control.
Okay.
We have our own frequency that we go on to, and then usually, not always, but usually it'll be me in the tower, and we've got a little tower that we set up out there, and I'll be telling them, you know, this individual aircraft's going to go here, this is going to go here, this is going to go here, you know, and then I'll have people out there that actually flag them in and park them in those locations.
Have you ever had any occasion on these fly-ins that somebody comes in and for whatever reason not able to get their plane restarted or anything? Does that happen?
Oh yeah, it's happened.
Everybody, how they resolve that? Does everybody chip in and help?
Or, we help them.
Okay.
We help them. We're all aircraft mechanics and builders and pilots, and we'll all chip in. We've had people that's had flats. I've taken them, put them in my truck after the fly-in was over with, and taken them downtown, and we've had flats and tubes replaced and things like that, and get it back on the airplane, and they go home. But no, we're not going to abandon anybody. If someone comes in, we're going to help them.
Okay. Do y'all have like regulars that come to the fly-ins?
Oh yeah. We've got regulars that's coming. Matter of fact, I had a young man that came in here. Oh, it's been several years back, and I had to fly him all the way back to Fort Worth. His airplane had broke, and he had a landing gear problem, and I took him back to his car in Fort Worth at an airport in Fort Worth. So, yeah, we're gonna take care of anybody that comes.
So like in that case, he needed a place to leave his plane. Did he leave it in y'all's hangar, or did he just leave it out in the open?
That particular time, it was put up and protected until he could get it fixed.
Okay. Well, Mr. Lindenberry, I sure appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Jonathan.